Today's daf in Masechet Pesachim brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh is daf Lamed Zayin, and I would assume that you're holding on the bottom of Lamed Vav Lamed Beis, but I didn't get confirmation of exactly where you got up to. If that's not where you got up to, please let me know. Okay, excellent. Thank you. Okay, so what's happened is that in the context of learning about all of the dinim of Achila, and how they're interrelated with the Yisrei Hano, and how they all come down to how they all come down to relating to the dinim of Pesach, and therefore involve also kachim and truma. Yesterday we discovered that they also involved context, so that a question of what type of achila it is, which of course all comes again from the mitzvahs of Pesach, namely Lechem Oni, Lechem She'oni Malav, which means that related us also to whether it has to be begetter something that doesn't allow for Oni. So maybe it wouldn't allow for Maaser She'ni, because it says Lo Achalti Ba'Oni Mimeni. Obviously something of a play on words, but in any event, it's certainly a question of the Simcha versus the idea of Anias. Today, we want to look into what appears at the beginning to be a continuation of the issue that you ended up with yesterday, which was the chashivas of a matzah, just simply in terms of how big and how beautiful it is, which would make it a non-lechem oni. And here to discuss the implications of that for the actual dinim of chametz, because it turns out, I mean, obviously there's got to be some kind of limit to how thick a matzah can be, because there comes a point at which it's unreasonable to expect that something is going to be able to bake in a way that prevents the ongoing chimutz in the internal area at the time that it's cooking the outside. It takes time for the heat to penetrate. By the time the heat penetrates, all that's happened is actually the initial heat is just encouraging chimutz. And therefore, you ought to have a particular way of making matzahs. Forget about the ashishim that we talked about yesterday in terms of the overall size of the matzah. How about the thickness of the matzah? So Tana Rabbanan, today at the bottom of Lamed Vav Lamed Beis, Tana Rabbanan, Ein Ofin Pat Avah BePesach Divrei Beit Shammai. You cannot bake a thick matzah on Pesach. So it says Beit Shammai, we don't understand exactly what size is meant by thick matzah, but we'll see.
We were up to the
Tanurabanan Lechem Oni, Lechem Oni. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. That's why I took for granted that you had done, that you had done already. Okay, sorry. Well, we know who we have to talk to about that. No. Thank you. Very, very grateful. Thank you so much for the beautiful job that I heard you did yesterday. I'm very, very grateful. Okay, so let's see. Let me get back there then. So do we start? We start over again, I guess. Should I start with today's daf? No. Okay, so Tana Rabbana. Lechem Oni. So the concept of Lechem Oni is that it's supposed to be bread for a poor man. There's a simple meaning of it. Parat lechalut v'lashisha. So this means, first of all, it can't be scalded, because scalded, basically, I mean, there's really a lot of machlokas in about particularly what this means, but we're going to get into it in detail, what would be included in chalut. But the pashtus is that it's chalut simply while it's in the state of either being a flour, or after you make it into a dough, but before you've actually kneaded the dough, you mixed it with water, now you pour on boiling hot water. So the ashisha, exactly, is a very large bread. And we'll see what that means in a moment, too. So you might think that you would have to use only a very unprocessed flour, that would have to be like a whole wheat coarse kind of bread. Tamud lomar matzot matzot riba. Again, as we've seen, that we have many, many times we have the issue of matzot repeated and repeated and repeated. That's to tell me that there are all kinds of ribuyim, and that includes even fine matzah, so white matzah, white flour matzahs would also be kosher. As a matter of fact, afil k'matzot shel Shlomo, even Shlomo HaMelech, who had only the finest things on his table, even that type of matzah would also be considered to be a kosher matzah. So then what makes it poor man's bread? I mean, if it's made out of such beautiful flour, prat lechalut v'la'ashisha. So that must be what we spoke about a moment ago. By the way, how do you know that ashisha is implying something that is very high class? So it's very, very important stuff. That means that it's something that belongs really on the Shulchan of Shlomo. So dechtiv vayechalek l'chol ha'am l'chol ha'mon Yisrael me'ish v'adisha. So at the time that the Oren HaBris was brought to Yerushalayim, so David HaMelech gave out to every single individual, every man and every woman, he gave out a chalat lechem echad, ve'eshpar echad, v'ashisha echad. And what are those things? So v'amr v'chanem bar abba, the eshpar is a good piece of steak, which is echad mishisha bepar. So it's so large that it was actually 1/6 of a bull. Whew, that is a big piece of meat. Plus, he gave out an ashisha, and that is this enormous, beautiful loaf that is comprised of something that's the size of 1/6 of an eva, which is gigantic. I mean, it's really crazy. I mean, it's over 6 pounds of flour, according to even the smallest shiurim, which that's an amazing amount of bread. So this was given to each and every individual. But meanwhile, you see the lashon of ashpar is something of the size of chashiva. So pliga d'shmuel, the Yom HaShmuel, ashisha. The meaning of ashisha over here, which makes sense because it says, David HaMelech gave them bread and steak. So what's missing? Wine. So that's what the meaning is, of course. So ashisha is a garba de chamra. So that's basically a nice container full of wine, as it says in the pasuk. V'ohavei ashishei anavim. Ashishei anavim means actually not actual grapes, but it means the pitchers full of what comes from the grape, which is undoubtedly not a reference to a giant cluster of grapes, which would be the way you're learning. That's a question of the size. It's actually a reference to wine. Tana Rabbanan. So now getting to where we were before. Inofin pat avab pesach. So as we said, there's got to be a limit to the size in terms of the thickness. This is a limit to the size in terms of chashivas. But how about how thick it is? I mean, the fact that it may be, you know, 6 pounds of flour or even a good deal more, according to many shitas, doesn't tell us how thick it is. I mean, it might just have been what's that called? That world record thing? Forgot about it. Anyway, but yes, thank you. Yes, the Guinness Book. It may be the Guinness Book of World Records for the widest matzah, you know, but it might be only 1 millimeter thick, so it's a mile wide matzah. And that would definitely make the Guinness Book. And that itself would give it a tremendous chashivas, right? So, but how thick can it be? So according to Beit Shammai, you're not allowed to bake something that is too thick on Pesach. Now, he doesn't define what that means. And according to Beit Hillel, it would be mutter. So if Beit Hillel is matir, I mean, obviously there's got to be some limit, right? Because, I mean, the point is there's going to be a thickness that will prevent the heat from the baking process from being able to stop the chametz. So by the time that it's baked, it's going to be chametz. So how thick would Beit Hillel possibly be matir? Omer vuna up to a tefach. Where do we get that from? Because we know that the Torah actually talked about matzah that is a tefach thick and made it a mitzvah. Where is that? In the lechem haponim. So we learn out from the word ponim that since ein ponim b'chusim mitefach, so that would mean that the Torah is telling us that the thickness of the lechem haponim, which was shaped in that curious box-like shape, is one tefach thick. And since that needs to be matzah, it says beferish, so because of that, it must mean that the Torah is beferish being matir matzah one tefach thick, in which case that would be the size of the maximum matzah that Beis Hillel would be matir. Matkiflo Rabbi Yosef, you're going to use that as a model? I mean, like, that's crazy to apply a model that has all types of very special constraints and to say that you can do this at home. I mean, that's what you're saying, that anybody can make themselves a matzah that will be kosher, will not be mischametz, and it'll be a tefach thick based on that in the Beis HaMikdash. And the Beis HaMikdash, you're talking about zrizim. You're talking about a special that was for, not only is it Beis Din in charge, but this is Beis Garma that were like had a Besera for generations of for hundreds of years. How it is that they're going to be baking this matzah? You understand? They were the only ones who could make the lechem aponim. Can you imagine the detailed expertise? I mean, it's incredible for somebody to go say that because you've got the greatest experts in history in a baking process and in being able to make something that is absolutely perfect in terms of its mixture and so on, that you're going to say you can do at home? Yom Rubish Einam is Rizim? I mean, not to mention the fact that any of the menachas that were baked needed to go through a process of pat amela. So you needed to pound it 500 times each bit, and you needed to press on it 300 times. I mean, you tell me what woman does that at home baking matzah? You're going to compare this to regular bread? She'eino amela? And also, when you bake the lechem aponim, you bake anything in the Beis HaMikdash, remember that you had the very special dinim about how the wood has to be completely dried. You weren't even allowed to take wood in if it had grown, if you had harvested it after Tu B'Av, right? Because, I mean, it's no longer hot enough to really dry things out. I mean, it was people have like garbage wood where it's, you know, popping and it's full of all kinds of moisture and doesn't really burn warm. I mean, imagine the difference in the temperature and the reliability of the temperature and the smoothness of the temperature. I mean, how can you compare something that you have at home? Yom Rubeitzim Lachim. And in the Beis HaMikdash, the oven worked constantly. So that means you didn't start off with a freezing cold oven and start from nothing. And then you have to wait. And now you're going to be using basically a cool oven, even though it says on the thermostat that it's okay. But that is in terms of the temperature, not in terms of the heat. So Yom Rubetanur Cham, Yom Rubetanur Tzonein. And not only that, but in the Beis HaMikdash, they had a metal oven. The metal oven, of course, would be much easier to heat up. And it had to be a metal oven because it had to be klishores, and the klishores can't be made out of cheres. Mashenka, you're going to talk about a home oven which is made out of cheres, which would take forever for you to get it warm. So the Gemara says, you know, you're right. Okay, I can't use the lechem aponim. And therefore now, here is a very important nekuda halacha lemaisa. And therefore what? Therefore, all that you could say that the Gemara has decided is that therefore we don't have a raya that the shear is a tefach. We don't have to change everything that we said from one extreme to another, right? And yet what the Gemara does is, you know what? The way in which this was actually understood, says Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba, I asked my Rebbe, and I asked him b'yichud. It's interesting that b'yichud, we know, has different kind of meanings, like the Rambam brings by the halakh of in Ilchus Tshuva, about the Avika Avodim, Amisham Shemes Harav, Shalom Anas Kabo Pras. So it says the Gedolim would be Mitzavader Talmidim B'yichud. B'yichud there over there meant privately, which is the first pshat that Rashi brings over here. The other meaning of B'yichud is pointedly. In other words, this specific issue I raised, which is not the way that it's normally used, but certainly can be used that way. So he brings both possibilities. And this was Rav. And others say it was Rabbi Yirmiyah Bar Abba who quoted Rav. And Rav said, I asked my Rebbe. And if Rav asked his Rebbe, then who is that? Manu, that's Rabbeinu HaKodesh. And what he asked him was, what is the meaning of Pat Ava? So, I mean, it could be that therefore he asked it to him privately because this wasn't something that he thought he was going to get an answer, a tefach, half a tefach, whatever it is. And he didn't want to spread this around that it should be done at home because of exactly the things that we just raised. People at home don't have that level of care and don't have that level of equipment or materials that they can rely on. So therefore it was done. B'yichud. To which he said, your hope shot is wrong. The meaning of patava has nothing to do with how thick it is, even though it sounds that way. It has to do with how many matzahs are in the oven at one time. That's what it has to do with. And that has nothing to do with the dinim of chametz, because that makes no difference. On the contrary, Gemara says elsewhere that it's useful for an oven to be more full, because that way it distributes the heat around the whole thing. So the reason that it says not to use the patava, first of all, who ever heard of using it, that word for, I understand, thick bread means a lot of bread? Amai korale patava. It could be it's called patava because it's very thick when you make the dough. Originally, when you make the dough, you don't split up the dough into tiny little round balls like Richie does in our matzah baking. You know, you don't do that originally. First, you got to make yourself this big dough. So at that point, it's very thick. So it's a thick, we call it on terms of the dough. Mishum de nefisha belisha, or ibayit ima. It could simply be a very local idiomatic use of the word thick. In other words, in that place, Ba'atri Da'aitana, they would call it, oh man, this is a thick bread oven. So the pat meruba pat avakarli, in any event, what would be the reason? If it's because, imishim dekotarach tirchot lo tzarach, which according to Beit Shammai, he's saying, this of course would have nothing to do with chametz. So then why did you say Pesach? We said, remember the gear said, we started with it, is in ofim pat ava bepesach. I mean, if it's a din in tircha, because you're going to be baking more than you need, so then it should be osra on any yantiv, afilu biyantiv nami, in achinami. That's the truth is that really it's across the board. It happens to be that the brisa that we were talking about was a brisa that was talking about the different dinim that would apply to matzah. So we threw in, and by the way, if you're baking, you should know you can't bake a lot of matzahs together either. But that's because the tircha would apply on any yantar. And the fact is, there was another brisa that says that Beit Shammai Omrin, Enofim Pat Ava Biyom Tov, no mention at all of Pesach. Now, so the question is, how do we come out from this sugya? You see, because if you learn that the sugya had complete charata from what we said before, so then what are we left with in terms of the pat ava? So lemaisa the Shulchan Aruch paskins, this accounts for a tremendous difference in the actual minhagim of different people in Klal Yisrael. Because as the Shulchan Aruch comes out, look, he says, I mean, you know, he doesn't explain where he gets it from, but basically he says, look, the Gemara never had charata from the Isser of Pat Ava. It's just that we didn't use the Tefach as the shear, right? That's all. We said a different pshat in Pat Ava, so we ended up not getting into it, but it left us hanging in terms of Pat Ava. The only information that we do have is that the Torah was matir a Tefach. That's all that we know. So that lemaisa, I understand that lechatchila, you don't want to go all the way to a tefach and tell people to make that at home. But since we know that it is possible to make a tefach that is kosher, so therefore, if somebody makes pot, a matzah that is a tefach, up to a tefach, that's good. Better not to go that far. Okay, fine, so make a half a tefach. I mean, it's not like specific, right? But if you take a look in Rashi over here, when Rashi says, when he's describing what it is to have the oven full of a lot of separate matzahs, when we come around to the other meaning of patava, so Rashi says that we're talking about these thin matzahs of rikikin. Why does he throw that in? So in other words, he's learning that since we weren't able to give you a shear, the thinner the better, apparently. That indeed is the way that the Rambam paskins, which accounts for the difference between the Teimani matzot and the Ashkenazi matzot. So in other words, if you take the Gemara as simply, look, okay, we're not going to be matir baking a tefach at home. So obviously use your brains. Don't overdo it. Okay, so you get a nice soft pita matzah, which is obviously nowhere near a tefach, you know, so it's a tenth of a tefach. Masha Inkin, the way the Rambam paskins that, well, since the Gemara changed completely, so basically we're saying, look, as thin as you can make the matzah, the better. So then it became the Ashkenazic approach to basically make these crackers instead of matzahs, which according to the Sfardim, you don't even make a motzi lechem in aretz on during the year, because they're not considered to be tzuras in a pot. It's fascinating. All of that comes from the implications of what it is that Rebbe or Rav, depending on the story here in the Gemara, changed their approach. Now, in fact, says the Gemara, as the Brisa says, really you can be yotze with very clean matzahs, white kind of white flour matzahs, or you can have whole wheat matzahs, badra'a. You could even be yotze besrikin amitsuyarin. So if you have these really pretty cracker kind of things that have these nice little animal cookie matzah, right? So they've got either they're actually in the shape of animals, you know, so the kids are having a lot of fun with their little their little turtle matzahs or their mermaid matzahs or whatever, right? Or it could mean that they're just pictures that are put onto the matzah on top. You mean, you don't see with that also. You say, well, I mean, doesn't that make it like very beautiful? And doesn't that take off the din of lechem oni? No. So in other words, we're not, there's no problem. Even though lemaisa, you're not supposed to make those kind of matzahs. Now, the reason you're not supposed to make those kind of matzahs is because since they take more time to decorate, so we're worried that by the time you finish decorating them, you're going to not be careful of how long they've been sitting around. And therefore, they will end up becoming chametz, but it had nothing to do with the question of lechem oni. So, if it was, and you ate it, it would still be perfectly kosher in terms of being yotzei matzah. Omer of Yehuda, you know, there's a story about this whole idea of the iser, of making tzrikin. It turned out that Baitus ben Zonin, who was a baker, he asked the Chachomim, why is it that there's this ordinance that you guys have said, that enosin tzrikin ha-matzuyorin be-Pesach? I mean, it's like, this is my expertise. Omer lo, mipnei sha-isha shoha alav, because it takes a woman a long time to make it properly. And, you know, when the women are making challah, they make pretty shapes and so on. That takes a long time. And because she wants to do such a nice job, you know, so meanwhile become matzah. Omar lahem, so he said to them, I understand that, but I mean, what about like if you're somebody like me, you know, you can make a stamper with these beautiful shapes on it. You got 10 different stampers and you just pound it out and it takes absolutely no time. And yikba ena kevan, you simply give a stamp straight on the dough, and it becomes kavua all at once. It takes no time. Amrulo, yeah, that's really very nice. But when we make a gezera, we don't make it according to the particular circumstances, because that kind of gezera can't possibly work. What are people going to say? Well, I mean, obviously, all types of decorated matzahs are usur on Pesach, except for Siriki Baitas. You know, I wonder how much he paid the kashrus agency to say that, you know. I mean, it's a disaster. So you can't have that kind of gezera. And therefore, we had to usur it across the board. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadok, I don't know that everybody agrees with that. Because, I mean, I could tell you that once I went with my father, Rabbi Tzadok, I went to Rabbi Gamliel's home, and they brought out these beautiful matzahs that were all decorated. And really, it was like marvelous work. I say to my father, Abba, I thought that they said, Einosin Tzrikin Metzirin, but Pesach, here's Rabbi Gamliel with these beautiful tzrikin. Amar li, b'ni, lo shel kol adam amru. They did not say that you can't make beautiful tzrikin metzuyarin. They said dafka bakeries can't do that, because bakeries are in competition. And to the baker, it's extremely important to get like a very high quality kind of product. And so because of that, they were chayshish that the baker would actually end up making it chametz. But I mean, here we're talking about Rabbi Gamliel's household. They weren't that makpid that they should spend extra time on it. They just like flipped it in such a way that it looked really nice. Now, of course, that's sort of the opposite of the way that we were understanding it before. And in fact, Ikene Amri, others say that what Reb Tzadok told him was they weren't talking about bakery matzahs, which is what was brought here to Rebbe Gamliel. They were talking about homemade matzahs, which takes a long time. But the bakery always uses some type of professional stamp, and that's what he's serving us. Omer Reb Yossi, Osin Tzrikin Kamin Rekikin, Venosin Tzrikin Kamin Galus Kalt. Yet another shita, none of which we paska, is that you can make these decorated things if they're very thin, like cookies. But if they're thick, like pitot, then we're worried that it's going to be already shohet to the point where it will be mischametz. Okay, so we've got three other possibilities. Lemaisa, we end up asering all of them. Tana Rabbana. Now we're going to worry, as I said, that we bring out all of the halachas of the different inyanim of the concept of achila in general, truma, kachim, the dinim of chala, which is what we're about to get into now. What would be that interrelationship of chala and matzah? Taking off chala, and what do we learn from chala about matzah? So the truth is, the two places where the Torah speaks about lechem, we have the lechem oni, And we have Milechem Haaretz, which is what the Torah introduces the Parsha of Challah with. Because of that, it would mean that there's going to be shared halachas in what is defined by the concept of lechem. Because, I mean, does lechem include cake? Does lechem mean specifically that it's baked? Does it have to be baked in an oven? Can it be pan-baked? And so on and so forth. Does it have to be a thick kind of bread-like thing? Or can it be more of a sponge cake kind of thing? So all of these questions, of all places to find them, is dafka in the dinim of Pesach and the lechem that we use for matzah. So therefore, we move on from decorated bakery goods. Incredible thing that all of this is mamish based on our relationship to food as defined at Yetzias Mitzrayim. Tana Rabbanan, hasufganim. So if you've got a spongy kind of sponge cake or a spongy kind of bread, I forgot what they call. They make those. They're actually very yummy. I forgot what they call them here. Duvshanim, you can have bread that's made with honey, and iskritin, which is like crackers, very thin crackers. Chalat hamasrit, which is a loaf made in a frying pan. We'll see exactly what that means. Or if it's miduma, which of course is a completely different issue. A miduma would mean that it's mixed with truma. From all of these things, there's no din of taking off challah. Now, the reason we throw in the first case is, of course, the soft bread and the honey bread and the pan loaf and so on. That's not called bread because that's not the normal way that we prepare bread, as we'll see. What's the problem? The other part is a completely different issue. The other part has to do because since it says bedavka over here, the Lashon is, the Pasuk is, the haremotam truma Lashem, in terms of challah. If it's already been truma, which is what meduma means, if there's already been truma, it already had dinim of truma, so because of that, there's no new halacha of making it for the first time truma. Now, let's try to get the meaning of this. What exactly is a chalat hamasrit? Om Rebbe Shoben Levi, this refers to chalut shoba'alei batim. So this is a type we spoke about before, what it would mean to have bread that's been scalded. And we'll see that this is different in terms of how it's prepared at the end. And this is what Reish Lakish comes to say, that you should know that all of the cases that we spoke about before, those first four cases, up until we got to the problem of Meduma, those cases are all referring to where the final baking process was pan-baked and was not actually put into an oven. And so the problem over there is the combination of the baking process, the strange baking process that isn't the standard lechem, together with the way in which it actually was formed. So it's a thinner, or it's a spongier, or it's a sweeter, or it's a bagel-like consistency because of scalding. Put that together with the fact that you never ended up putting it in a regular oven, and you end up with something that is not mechayev you on challah because it's not lechem haaretz. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, ma'asei ilfas chayavim. I disagree with you very profoundly. Anything that you make in a frying pan is just as much bread as something that you put into an oven. That's my opinion. Now, when we're talking about, of course, frying pan here, we're not talking about a thing like a donut. We're not talking about deep fried. Deep fried is the equivalent of boiled in many ways. It's simply boiled in oil. But what we're talking about over here is something that had a thin bit of oil on it. Yikes, Goldstein's, help. All right, I got it. And because of that, according to Reish Lakish, I mean, Reish Lakish says, look, it's still basically fried in oil. And Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that's just like a non-stick frying pan. And why then, according to Rabbi Yochanan, what's the problem of those first four cases? They weren't even baked. They were sun-baked. They were simply put in the chama. Meisvei. Now, Reish Lakish seems to be wrong, because look at the braita. Sufganim, duvshanim, iskritim. Those are the cases that we spoke about. And it says over here, if you made them in a frying pan, then you are chayev. This is exactly what Reish Lakish says. You're pater from challah. But if you bake them in the sun, then you're pater. So this is mamish word for word like Rabbi Yochanan. Seems to be totally keneged Reish Lakish. Do you have to the Reish Lakish? Amarula. Reish Lakish can always get out of this problem by telling you like this. That Achabamai is kidding. You know what we're talking about over here? We're talking about where you heated up the frying pan so that when you put the dough into it, you were essentially putting it into a preheated oven. That's what is considered to be, if you first heat it up and then you put it in, that's the equivalent of an oven. I agree. Where I told you that it's not like an oven is where you treated it like pan frying. In other words, you took something, put it in the pan, and you're heating it as you're putting it into the pan. I mean, that's something else. That's not like an oven cooking at all. So because of that, I said it was squatter. So excuse me, Reish Lakish. So what are you saying? That in the event that you would have first put it into the oven, and then you would have put it on the fire, so then you're saying that the braita would have held that it would be potter, like you. That's what you're saying. So can you tell me why the braita, why would the Tana of the braita contrast the case of oven fried to a case of sunbaked, when you could have said a much bigger chiddush? Don't move on to sunbaked. Say the difference is whether you preheated the frying pan or you didn't preheat the frying pan. It's crazy to move on to saying sunbaked. The difference should be in the same case. Where do I say that if it's pan-baked, that it's the halacha is that it's chayev, that's where you heated the pan first, and then you put in the dough. And you would be potter, because after all, that's what Reish Lakish holds. Yeah, true, but Reish Lakish would actually tell you that the braita is missing a few words over here. And what the braita really means to say is this. It's missing these words. It actually does say what I said. In other words, you're supposed to understand that anything other than a preheated pan is just the same as sunbaked. Would you think that sunbaked is a normal way of baking? What's the difference between sunbaking or putting something into a pan and then putting the pan on the fire? So therefore, read the braita as if it says like this. But if you did anything other than that, like you tried to make it the way you would fry up something, then that would be the equivalent of sunbaked and it's potter. He could say that. Okay, Toshma, how about this braita? It says when it comes to matzah, now we're back to matzah again, as opposed to dinim of challah, yotzim b'matzah hina, hina is a lashon of na, na is partially, and it's particularly appropriate for the dinim of Pesach, of course, because the Torah uses that word in talking about the Korban Pesach. So we use that to mean matzah that isn't fully baked. And I'm sure lots of times you've had heart-stoppingly raw-looking matzah, right? Where you open the matzah and it looks like, oh man, this doesn't even look baked. This looks like dough, right? So that is called matzahina. And you're actually yotze with that type of matzah, which we're going to define what it is. And matzah that was made in a ilfas, in a frying pan. So you see, again, not like Reish Lakish, exactly like Reb Yochanan, that matzah made in a frying pan is okay. Ochanami, shir tiach ulabesof hitbik. This is exactly the same case. We'll have to say like Reish Lakish said before. So then, okay, fine, you can get away with that, but how do you define exactly matzahina? If you can break open the matzah and it separates cleanly, one piece from the other, and there's no strands of stringy dough that's connecting it, that is called sufficiently baked to be considered a baked matzah that has prevented it from becoming chometz. Omar Rava, yes, the same thing is true about lachmei toida. Obviously, says the Gemara. I mean, either it's matzah or it's not matzah. I mean, the lachmei toida is supposed to be matzah. If you're telling me that matzah hina is sufficiently baked to prevent it from becoming chometz, so then, of course. So isn't that pshita? It says lechem here and it says lechem there. Why would I think it's different? That's the third place that it mentions lechem. Because ma'od etema, if Rava hadn't told you this halacha, you might have thought like this. Since it says specifically, the yikriv mimenu echad mikol korban, that over there when you're bringing, you have to bring one lechem from each of the four different types of the three types of matzah, the one type of chometz, one has to be given to the kohen, and that is the lachmei teida, the trumas of lachmei teida.
I forgot my chelik for a people drink.
Okay, thank you. So I might have thought that there is a specific chashivas there to being held together as a single challah, which the Torah is adding. It's not only a challah, but it has to be a lechem echad. And maybe I would think that if it's this crumbly, even if it doesn't have these little pieces of sticky dough, you know, that are pulling, it's still considered to be not really held together properly, and it would be like broken up pieces, and it wouldn't have a din of lechem echad. And that's why Rav has to tell me, not only is it considered to be kosher, but it's also held together properly, even though you might think that it's a little bit loose and dough-like. Okay, now let's take a look whether Rabbi Yochanan is right. We've been asking on Reish Lakish the whole time. Here we've got a brisa that talks about something which is called a mi'isa. Now, we're going to see that a mi'isa has something to do with flour that was scalded with boiling hot water. It's not clear whether it's scalded. You put the water over the flour, you put the flour into the boiling hot water. That we'll see. But that's called mi'isa. So Beit Shammai says you're potter from challah just because of the fact that it was mi'isa. I don't care how you prepared it. Ubeit Hillel, say you're chayev. How about chalita? Now, obviously, the word chalita has the same meaning. It means that it was scalded. So we're going to ask in a moment, well, what's the difference between the word chalita and mi'isa? But anyway, if it's chalita, so then Beit Shammai, strangely enough, here we reverse it. Beit Shammai is mechayev, and Beit Hillel is potter. And it's difficult to imagine that there's going to be such a difference between a mi'isa format of scalding and a chalita format of scalding that literally we should have a reversal of the shitas of Beit Shammai. Why would they reverse? I mean, I understand you want to tell me maybe there's some slight difference which made a Beit Hillel Beit Shammai or something like that, but a reversal is very strange, isn't it? Okay, we'll see in a moment what this could mean. So which one is which? The mi'isa is you put the flour into the boiling water. And the chalita is that you pour the boiling water, the muglashim, that are boiling, are poured over the flour. Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shum Aviv, either one, whether it's mi'isa, whether it's chalita, they're both potter, because it's not normal. Or others say that what Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi said, Mishem Aviv, is that either one is chayev. But anyway, this makes more sense, because, I mean, you know, there doesn't seem to be such a big nafkamina in the process of how you do the chalita, right? Now we get yet another sheet of chachamim amrim, whereas the chachamim say, echad zeh v'echad zeh is irrelevant. The only relevant thing is whether it was baked in a stove or whether it was put into a frying pan. And that's the problem, because once you scald it, normally it's then fried like a kind of pancake kind of thing. So if after you did this mi'isar chalita on the flour, you went ahead and you put it into a frying pan, then you're putter from challah, because that's not the derech of lechem. If you put it into an oven, so then you would be chayev. Okay, so now, well, that means that we've got five different shitas here, which is really weird. So first we have Beis Hillel that claims that mi'isa is normal bread, not chalita. And Beit Shammai says, no, chalita is normal bread, but not mi'isa. And then we've got these two different shitas of Rabbi Yossi, that neither are bread or both of them are bread. And then we've got the chachamim that it depends whether you fried it or whether you baked it. So now the question over here is, the Tanakhama. I mean, how do you flip? I don't understand. And what's the difference between mi'isa and chalita? Explain that to me. Om Rabbi Yehuda, Om Shmuel, V'chein Om Rabbi Yochanan, V'tem Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. No. You completely misunderstand. This is not the same shita where we suddenly flip. These are two different shitas about what Beit Shammai Beit Hillel says. There's no difference between a chalita and a mi'isa. It's different words referring to what boils down to fundamentally the same idea. Scalded flour. Okay, so now the way to understand the beginning of the brisa is like this. There's no reversal of shitas. Obviously, that's crazy. And basically, Tavra, what you have to do is recognize that there are two different shitas being brought up here, and which you took to mean the same shita that's reversing the shitas of Beit Shammai. That's not what happened. Mi shishana zo. Loshana Zo, that's all. So basically, there's no difference to the way in which I scald it. The first part is one shita, according to which Beit Shammai holds that it's Patra and Beit Hillel holds that it's Chayev, which would mean that it would be Mechumre Beit Hillel. And the other one reverses it and says that no, whether it's Me'isa, whether it's Chalita, this is a normal case of Chumre Beit Shammai and Kulei Beit Hillel. That's all. So we end up with those two shitas. And Mishana Zo, Lo Shana Zo. But we still have, okay, and this is what's important to me, we still have the Chachomim. The Chachomim say that forget about the scalding. How did you bake it? If you baked it in a pan, that's not called bread. If you baked it in an oven, that is called bread. Now, that clearly says that Rabbi Yochanan is wrong. Because Rabbi Yochanan says pan-baked and oven-baked is exactly the same thing. So how do we have over here the Chachomim say that it's not the same thing? Says Rabbi Yochanan, listen, I mean, I agree that there's no other way to read this brisa except as a contradiction to me. True, but I say it's about Machlokes Tanoim. And I'm not going according to the shitas in this brisa. I'm going according to this brisa, the Tanya. You might think that if it's scalded flour, that you would have to take challah from it. Talmud lomar lechem ha'aretz. It has to be real bread. Rabbi Yehuda Eimer, ein lechem ela ha'afui betanur. Real bread has to be baked in an oven. Wait, isn't that the same thing as the Tanakhama is saying? So what do you think, says Rabbi Yochanan? Did the Tanakhama ever say anything different than that? So what do you think the meaning is? I'll tell you what the meaning is. Meaning is like this, that the difference is if it hadn't been for the scalding, what would have been the sheet of the Tanakhama? That's the point. So Rabbi, its meaning is Maisa Ilfazika Minayu. So the Tanakhama holds if it would have been put into a frying pan and it was normal, so then it would be Chayev. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says, I don't care if it's scalded or not scalded. Anything that is going to be made in a frying pan is not considered to be bread. That's the point. So in other words, the Tanakhama is saying what I'm saying, that anything that I would put into a frying pan is not considered to be bread. Says the Gemara, look, I mean, you know, Rabbi Yochanan is trying to prove that there is a Machlokes Tanoim. These are very flimsy grounds for proving that there's a Machlokes Tanoim. I mean, he's taking a lot for granted in understanding the implication of Rabbi Yehuda saying, well, there's no such thing as bread unless it's baked in an oven, that that's a reference to all types of bread. I mean, there's a completely different way to understand this braita, according to which Rabbi Yehuda makes sense, but nobody is ascribing to the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan, okay? The way to read it could simply be that this is the type of issue that comes up with bagel. So in other words, in a bagel where you will scald it and then you put it into an oven, then you bake it. Okay, so now maybe that's what it's talking about. Not where you initially put it into a frying pan or something. So and that's it, only initially. But maybe everybody agrees that actually Maisa Ilfis are definitely potter, not like Rabbi Yochanan. And the question over here is whether you put it in after you had put it into a frying pan and fried it. Now you go and you bake it in the oven. So the Tanakhama says, as long as at the end of the process you end up baking it, that's called bread. So kivan shechazava afa'o betador, that's called lechem ha'aretz, and it's chayev and challah. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda, what Rabbi Yehuda is really saying is, Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that doesn't mean bread is only something baked in an oven. It means bread is something that is only baked in an oven, not bread is only baked in an oven. That makes a big difference. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, for some reason, which we'll see, he derives from a remez in the Pasuk, that something which was baked in under any circumstances except 100% from beginning to end in an oven is not considered to be bread. Ein lechem ela afui betanur mi'ikara. Not to start off in the oven. But given the mi'ikara lav betanur afui over here, just because you put it back into an oven, that is not considered to be bread. Which is a big chiddush. Where would he get it from? Rava has a beautiful drasha about where he gets it from. Because in the klolas, it says, va'afu eser nashim lach v'chem betanur achat. So you will have 10 women baking your bread in one oven. So, I mean, You could just say you have 10 women baking in one oven. So saying baking your bread is coming to, as there's a separate, a between the line limit over here about what the nature is of your bread. So it's telling me, Tanur Echad defines Lach Mechem, you hear? So if it's baked in one oven and not moved from a frying pan into an oven, if it's baked Belech Betanur Echad, that Ein Afoy Betanur Echad Ein Okori Lechem. Now, Rabbah and Reb Yosef, imagine here's the shear. You have Ula up front giving the shear. Rabbi Zeira was in the front row. Right behind Rabbi Zeira was Rabbah and Reb Yosef. So they were like already, remember that in those days, you sat according to where you were in terms of your abilities. So they were sitting in the row behind Rabbi Zeira. And they wanted to ask something, but they were embarrassed to ask themselves. So Rabbah taps Rabbi Zeira, who's sitting in front of him on the shoulder, and whispers to him, psst, ask Ula, what would be if you would put the dough around the inside of the frying pan, and then you would heat it on the outside? So Rabbi Zeira says, you kid, what are you talking about? If I tell him something like that, he'll throw me out of the room with my Emily. He'll say to me, what do you think we've been talking about for the past half hour? We were in the middle of talking about ilfus. That's what an ilfus is, you jerk. I was going to ask that. So he'll say, hi, Neum, I say ilfus. What, all of a sudden you're waking up after we're discussing this for the whole year? So then Rabbi Yosef tapped Rabbi Zeira and said, psst, ask him, what would be the din if you would put the dough inside, but instead of heating it from the outside, which is called a maisa ilfus, suppose you would actually put the frying pan under the direct flames. So it would be like a broil. Would put your oven on broil. What would be the din over there? So he said, you're not going to make a fool of me. I'm not going to ask him that. Because if I ask him that question, he's going to say to me that Rovaniyim Osim Ken, most people who cannot afford any kind of fuel, that's the way that they use the normal Maisa Ilfus. Because they can't really heat it from the outside. They're going to lose too much of the heat. So what they do is they actually put the flames directly there. And they'll tell me, Rov Aniyim Osim Ken, is the only way that they can have enough heat. And because of that, I'm not going to ask him a question like that. Okay, Rabosai, I think, maybe we should just finish up. Amar Vasi, Isa Shomaser Sheini, Lediver Rabbi Meir, Ptura Menachala, Lediver Chachom Yuchayevet Bechala. There's another important issue about what the meaning of the Lechem Haaretz would be. And that is that it depends whether it's considered to be personal property or whether it's considered to be Momon Gavoa. Since we have a long-standing machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachomim about what the din is of Meiser Sheni, and according to Rabbi Meir, Meiser Sheni has a halacha of being Momon Gavoa, so because of that, it's Potter from Chala, whereas according to the Chachomim, it's Chayev and Chala. What's the difference? Who owns it? Now we're going to have to see from the Pusik. Matzot, but how about if you make matzah of Meiser Sheni? Same thing. For some reason, according to Rabbi Meir, Ein Adam Yotzei Yedei Chavasa B'Pesach. Whereas according to Chachomim, Yotzei by Yedei Chavasa B'Pesach. And what about an Esrog of Meiser Sheni? Same thing. According to Rabbi Meir, you're not Yotzei with an Esrog, that is Meiser Sheni Esrog. According to the Chachamim, you are Yotzei with it. Matkev lo Rav Papa, so Rav Papa said, this doesn't make any sense. Look, I understand the part about the challah, okay? The reason you would be potter is because the Pasuk considers the definition of challah to be reshit arisotechem. Why does it say arisotechem? It means it has to belong to you, mishalachem. So I understand, it has to be yours. If you're talking about an esrog, it says ulekachtem lachem. The lulav and esrog has to belong to you. According to Rabbi Meir, that it's momon gavoa, you're not yotzei. But where the heck do you get the idea that matzah has to be yours? Does it ever say in the Torah, matzatchem? Never says this. Because the meaning of the interrelationship of matzah and challah goes in both directions. That's the pella. And if something doesn't work for challah, it doesn't work for matzah. If it doesn't work for matzah, then it doesn't work for challah. And therefore, once we've talked about the idea of lechem, since it compares lechem oni to lechem ha'aretz, so atya lechem lechem, we have a gezeira shava. Ktivacha, so it says by matzah, lechem oni, and it says legabe challah milechem ha'aretz. Therefore, we understand that just like in terms of the dinim of challah, it has to be arisotechem. Incredibly, that teaches us that it's so much a cheftz of the achila, of your arisa, that if it doesn't match up with what would be considered to be lechem for challah, it's not considered to be your lechem for matzah. Absolutely amazing. Okay, we'll see tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, try to find a clear-cut raya to this beautiful Kiddush of Ravasi. Okay, everyone, thank you very much. Thank you so much for your tanchumim that I deeply appreciate. And for the time you took to express them. And we should only hear Bisurot Tovot and be able to only give each other Bisurot Tovot. Thank you very much.